Tonight we're in the 36th and 37th chapters of Isaiah. Let me just spend a couple of minutes in review. In chapters 1 through 39, we're dealing there with a great Assyrian effort to conquer the Assyrian period, an effort to conquer the Jews. Now Isaiah had been fighting a very violent fight. He had been contending for faith in Jehovah, and urging them not to go down into Egypt and make an alliance with the Egyptians, nor to compromise with the Assyrians, but to put their faith and their trust in God. And it's beginning to pay off in our lesson tonight. During that period, now when we come to our lesson tonight, we're in the conquest, or the effort rather, of the king of Assyria, King Sennacherib, to take Jerusalem, but he failed. And so here in these chapters, this portion here is looking forward now to what we have tonight. And I have these chapters tonight, in chapters 36 to 39. Now this is a historical period. This deals now with the effort of Assyria to take Judah and the defeat of Assyria. So now we come, and I might call this here this, the victory of Isaiah. Isaiah's victory here of Isaiah in this matter. Now, Isaiah is said, been fighting a valiant fight, but now he is winning the battle. The people are coming to him in our lesson tonight and next time, and through him seeking Jehovah. Well, they come face to face with their absolute need for God. There is no other way they can turn other than Jehovah or destruction. Now, following this, in the following chapters now, chapters 40 through 66, in these chapters, we have the preparation. Isaiah's preparing the people, preparing for the captivity and returning. That is, the captivity and ultimately God's return of the people, but not only the return, but the coming also of the Messiah. So we won't look at these four chapters. We won't get to two of them tonight. I'm sorry. I missed last time because I hoped to finish this section before I had to leave for this period of lectureship and preaching down in Texas. All right, now let's come to 36. Now it came to pass in the 14th year of King Hezekiah that Sennacherib, the king of Assyria, came up against all the fortified cities of Judah and took them. All right, now this would be about 701. It generally thought that 701 was the 14th year of Hezekiah's rule. Some folk make it 702. Now others go back and think it's a lot earlier than that, but I believe that's the correct date. About 702 or 1, and I really just put it like that. I made it just 702 or 1. Doesn't make any difference for a year, doesn't matter about that far back. Alright, but now Sennacherib became king of Assyria about 705. His father died that year, and he was made king. Now, after he settled his kingdom over in Assyria, got things quieted down. Now, then he comes out west because Hezekiah had been listening to the Pharaoh of Egypt, and he's about ready to rebel against it. But when Sennacherib came into the land, then Hezekiah stripped the temple of his gold and paid him the that which he levied against it. Sennacherib levied a very heavy tribute against Hezekiah, which he paid. But Sennacherib then didn't do what he said he would do. He kept on conquering taking these villages round about, and we're going to take Jerusalem. Now that's the background of our lesson tonight, and the need to go to Jehovah for help. Now no further, and he took those villages round about, and the king of Assyria sent Rabshakeh from Lachish to Jerusalem. Now that is not the name of a man, but the title, a military title of an individual. He sent him from Lachish to Jerusalem under King Hezekiah with a great army. Now the army, I don't know whether the army had reached there or not. And he stood by the conduit of the upper pool in the highway of the fuller's field. Now that's exactly the place where Isaiah had met Ahaz back in the 7th chapter and tried to get Ahaz to listen to Jehovah. But he wouldn't do it. And he was going to appeal unto Sennacherib, or rather unto the Assyria, the king at that time, but not Sennacherib, before that. I want to go back and look at that in the 2nd and 3rd verses of Isaiah 7. And it was told the king of the house of David, saying, Syria is confederate with Ephraim. And his heart trembled, and the heart of his people, as the trees of the forest, trembled with the wind. Now this old Ahaz was king at that time, a wicked man. Then said Jehovah unto Isaiah, Go forth now to meet Ahaz, thou shalt Jashub, thy son, at the end of the conduit of the upper pool, in the highway of the fuller's field. So this is the same place. I think it was in the northern section of the city of Jerusalem, and said unto him, Be quiet, and told him to ask of Jehovah a sign, but he wouldn't do it. His mind was already made up that he was going to appeal unto Assyria. In fact, I think he'd already made an appeal to it. But at any rate, God, when he wouldn't ask a sign, you recall, God said, All right, I'll give you a sign. I'm going to give you the king of Assyria as a sign. That wasn't what he wanted. But now then, in this lesson tonight, I don't remember how many years later, maybe 20 years later, maybe 30 years later, I don't know how many years it was after that, because there was a period in there of Ahaz finished his term, and then came another king or two in there. But at any rate, he was reaping now what he had sown back there. Off the upper pool. Then came forth unto him, that is unto Rabshakeh, unto him Eliakim, the son of Hilkiah, who was over the household, and Shebna the scribe, and Joah, the son of Asaph, the recorder. Now we had Eliakim and Hilkiah, Shebna, back in the 22nd chapter, where one of them was taken out of his office and another one put in. If you want to read that, it's in the 22nd chapter. Now these three men came out to meet Rabshakeh, and two that came with him. And Rabshakeh said unto them, Say ye now to Hezekiah. Now notice, he's an arrogant man, very arrogant. He doesn't even pay the honor of Hezekiah to call him king. So you get old Hezekiah, you just go tell him Hezekiah, wasn't an old man, young man, in his 30s. Say ye now to Hezekiah, Thus saith the great king, the king of Assyria. What confidence is this wherein you trust? Now trust you. You will tell Hezekiah, Where's your trusting yet? Now notice, I say you, Thy counsel and strength for the war are but vain words. Now on whom dost thou trust that thou hast rebelled against me? That is, he rebelled against the king of Assyria, paid the tribute, but he rebelled before that, then sent the tribute to try to make things right. Behold, that thou trustest upon the staff of this bruised reed, even in Egypt, whereon if a man lean, it will go into his hand and pierce it. So is Pharaoh, king of Egypt, to all that trust on him. Now, you remember back in an earlier chapter, back in what was it, 29 or 30, we were over there to go down into Egypt and carry a present back. Well, Hezekiah has sent an ambassage down to Egypt to try to make an alliance with the king of Egypt, I think it was Tahaka at that time, to help him. But now then, any time a person depended on Egypt, it always turned out to be a disaster. So I said this, so Rabshakeh was right here, when he said, if you lean upon him as a crutch, why, it's going to break and bruise you and go through your hand. And later on he said, your shoulder, it's going to pierce your shoulder. And that's what always happened. But Hezekiah had yielded to the pressure of his princes to make this appeal unto the king of Egypt, the Pharaoh of Egypt. Now he says, he moves on, Behold, you trust me, I'm going to pierce you. But if thou say unto me, We trust in Jehovah our God, is not that he whose high places and whose altars Hezekiah had taken away, and has said to Judah and to Jerusalem, You shall worship before this altar. Now that shows that this Rabshakeh, with all his knowledge and insight into the Jews and their religion, he missed the point here. What Hezekiah had done was to break down the altars to the idols that had been erected in Jerusalem. But Rabshakeh thought that he would remove the altars to Jehovah, so that Jehovah wouldn't help him in this matter. So he missed it on that point. But later on you'll see how much he did understand. Now therefore I pray thee, give pledges to my master, the king of Assyria, and I will give thee 2,000 horses, if thou be able on thy part set riders upon them. And that's a sneer. I would give you 200 horses. You couldn't find enough men to ride them. But you think of a herd of 200 horses, that's quite a... That would call a herd, what do you, a herd of horses? That would call, I know we call them cattle, a herd of cattle, flock of sheep. They call horses that, since so long I forgot them. Now, how then canst thou turn away the face of one captain of the least of my master's servants and put thy trust on Egypt for chariots and for horsemen? Well, of course, the point was they were trusting in them when they shouldn't have been. And am I now come up without Jehovah against this land to destroy it? Jehovah said unto me, go up against this land and destroy it. Now, did Jehovah say that? I doubt it very seriously. But he's making a wild thrust of that guess, because he knows it. Now, it is true that back in the 10th chapter, you remember, God said, ho Assyria, the rod of mine anger, the staff in his hand is mine indignation. I'll bring him against the people of mine anger, against the people of my wrath, whether they're in charge. And though he doesn't mean to save me. But in that same chapter, down in verse 25 and 6, God says, when I will have used him against Jerusalem and Judah, then I'll set my hand to his destruction. And God did not only say I'm going to use him, but I'm going to destroy it. So this man now is making, I think, a wild guess to say that Jehovah sent me here, but he may have known of the passage. I don't know about that. But at any rate, when he says God sent me, it is true. God was sending him. But God said, I'm going to bring him. But I don't think so now that's Rob Shaka knew that. But he makes out like he does. All right? Then said Eliakim and Shebna and Joah unto Rabshakeh, speak, I pray thee, unto thy servants in Assyrian language. For we understand it. Now, the Assyrian language, or the Armenian language, was the court language of that day. Now, it used to be French, but now it's English. English is the international language now used by international folks in their meetings and that. Whereas back here, it used to be French. Now, here it was, it's Armenian. Now, notice, for we understand it and speak not to us in the Jews' language, in the ears of the people that are on the wall. Now, what's the idea of that? The idea, we don't want these people to understand what you're saying. Well, I just made old Rob Shaki a little worse, because now you're going to talk to him in that language just because they didn't want him to. He didn't want the people to know it. He didn't want the people to know what he said. But now, notice, Rob Shaki said, hath my master sent me to thy master and to thee to speak these words? Hath he not sent me to the men to sit upon the wall to eat their own dung and to drink their own water, their own urine, with you? That's not terrible thing. In other words, we're going to make your seed so bad that you'll be eating your own refuse and drinking your own water. And, that should have terrified them. I don't imagine it did. But that's his statement there. Now, when Rabshakeh stood and cried with a loud voice, or rather then Rabshakeh stood and cried with a loud voice in the Jews' language. Now, doing the very thing they asked him not to, he said, hear ye the words of the great king, the king of Assyria. Who really is the great king entitled to that word and that title? Only Jehovah. But now, Sennacherib, the king of Assyria, the great king. Thus saith the king, let not Hezekiah deceive you. Now, I know you're talking to the men on the wall now. First, he addressed these three men representing Hezekiah. Said, you will tell Hezekiah this. Now, when he said, don't talk to us in the Jew language, but in the Syrian language. We don't want the people on the wall to understand what we're talking about. Now, then he goes right on to the Jew language and talks to the people on the wall. Now, he's on the outside there, down below there, talks to them. Thus saith the king, let not Hezekiah deceive you, for he will not be able to deliver you. Neither let Hezekiah make you trust in Jehovah, saying, Jehovah will surely deliver us. This city shall not be... Don't let Hezekiah say, Jehovah will surely deliver us. This city shall not be given into the hand of the king of Assyria. Don't let Hezekiah tell you that. Don't let him deceive you. Hearken not to Hezekiah. For thus saith the king of Assyria, make your peace with me, and come out to me, and eat ye every one of his vine, and every one of his fig tree, and drink ye every one the waters of his own cistern, until I come and take you away to a land like your own land, a land of grain and new wine, a land of bread and vineyards. That's a good way to get a fellow. Now you just go ahead and eat, and I would like it ready when I've whooped all these little pounds around here, conquered the whole thing. Then I'll take you away into captivity. Now, he's not letting them know what a terrible thing the march will be and all of that. He's seeking to deceive the people in that, of course. But the arrogance of him, he's a very arrogant man. You can see that. Very arrogant, very conceited, and all of that, like folks of that nature would be. Now, come on, just yield unto me. I'll let you go ahead and eat until I'm ready to take you away. Then I'll take you away. Otherwise, I'm going to destroy your city, and you'll be impoverished and all that. Beware lest Hezekiah persuade you, saying, Jehovah will deliver us. Hath any of the gods of the nation delivered his land out of the hand of the king of Assyria? Where are the gods of Hamath and Arpad? Where are the gods of Sepharvaim? And have they delivered Samaria out of my hand? Samaria had fallen by this time. Who are they among all the gods of these countries that have delivered their country out of my hand? That Jehovah should deliver Jerusalem out of my hand. How was he doing? He put Jehovah in the same class with those pagan gods, which were monarchies. And that's about the way the world looks at him today, putting him in the classification with non-entities, there's no gods and all that. Look back at the 10th chapter where God had said that back, where that had been said back here. He named all those same ones there in that, but we just pass on 8 to 11, I think it is. For he said, here's what he had said. For he said, are not my princes all of them kings? Is not Talmud his Carchemish? Is not Hamath his Arpad? Is not Samaria Damascus? As my hand hath found the kingdoms of the idols, whose graven images did excel them of Jerusalem out of Samaria, shall I not, as I have done unto Samaria and her idols, so do to Jerusalem and her idols? But Isaiah is foretelling what he's going to say back then, and now he's come and he's saying that. Well, I've taken every city. My king has taken all these cities. Now, there's not a god able to deliver. Now, do you think your gods are stronger? Well, let's not think about our God as just one of the many, gods. He is the eternal God and the only one. And his power is beyond our comprehension. All right. But they held their peace. Now, look, he's on the wall. They held their peace and answered him not a word. For the king's commandment was, saying, answer him not. Then came Eliakim, the son of Hilkiah, that was over the household, and Shebna the scribe, and Joah the son of Asaph, the recorder to Hezekiah, with their clothes rent, and told him the words of Rabshakeh. You got the picture. Now here comes this military general, comes out here, and he taunts them, and he flaunts, throws their whole Assyrian power into their face, and tells them your God is no God. What? Where do you start? When you want to destroy the confidence of the people. Destroy his confidence in his country. And destroy his confidence in his God. Now, when that's gone, when you have destroyed my confidence in God and my faith in the country in which I live, you've taken away an awful lot. I think our own people, our own country, is doing more to destroy faith in it than any foreign country ever could. They'll watch the news tonight, listen to national news every night, about all I can stomach. I get that much, about all you need. But when I listen to that, and the things that are going on, your God you receive, your confidence, and the rulers of your country slipping away. Those in power. You see, ebbing away. Now, but I still have something else. What do I have? I have a faith in God. He's still in control. Now, if you want to take that away from me, along with faith in the integrity of so many of your rulers, then what would you have left? Put that much with you. No, but I've got that. Nobody can take that away from me. Now, he's trying to destroy that confidence in Hezekiah. Hezekiah was a good man. That's true. He yielded to the pressure of sending down to Egypt. And all that was a mistake he made. And he made a mistake in sending all the gold to Sennacherib when he was conquering those cities. He did that. That's right. Made some mistakes. He was still a good man. In fact, a ruler makes mistakes doesn't mean he's a bad man. But at the same time, when those around him and others and he himself began to do things to cause your confidence to wane, then all you've got left is God. So this fellow's trying to throw both of them away. All right. And it came to pass when the king Hezekiah heard it, that he rent his clothes and covered himself with sackcloth and went into the house of Jehovah. Now, to rend their garments was an expression in those days of deep emotional sorrow or grief or concern. Putting on sackcloth on the head, that was a rough, a coarse, hairy garment. That when they were put on next to the body and put the clothes over it. Well, that not only made them feel all the worse there, but it was a demonstration of their poverty of thought, of power rather than humility, and their need for God. Hezekiah did that. All right, now let me notice here, Father. And went into the house of Jehovah. And he sent Eliakim, who was over the household, and Shebna the scribe, and the elders of the priests, covered with sackcloth, sent them unto whom? unto Isaiah the prophet, the son of Amoz. Now, let me go back to 2 Chronicles 32, 7, and 8, if you will. Here you have an account of the statement here of Hezekiah set forth here in the Chronicles. This the Chronicles are dealing with this very incident here. We're talking about, look at 7 and 8. And here's what Hezekiah is saying here. And he set captains over the folks and all that. But here's what he said in verse 7 and 8. Be strong and of good courage. Be not afraid nor dismayed for the king of Assyria, nor for all the multitude that are with him. For there is a greater with us than with him. With him is an arm of flesh. But with us is Jehovah our God to help us and to fight our battles. And the people rested themselves upon the words of Hezekiah, king of Judah. Now here, he is trying to assure them with these words here of confidence. But is that really an expression of faith yet? Or is that just simply an effort at confidence? Now, I think you come here in this passage we're studying right now, in 7, you come here to the point now where it's no longer an expression here of some kind of confidence. It now becomes a matter of faith. What's the lesson? Oftentimes we have to be driven against the wall before our feeling or our confidence or whatever it might have been becomes a real expression and act of faith. I think there's a difference. I think out here I can talk with all the confidence and all that. And I'm confident this is going to be. But now, when is my faith really expressed? It's when it's put to the test. You put that faith to the test, then it determines whether it was words or was it faith. Think about that. A lot of difference. A lot of difference in words and real faith. All right? Now notice as he moves on here then. So he went now and he sends the men in sackcloth unto Isaiah the prophet. So Isaiah now is winning this battle. They haven't paid attention to him up till now. Now, like Ezekiel when they studied Ezekiel 100 years later. Paying attention to Ezekiel at first. When Jerusalem was destroyed, now then they came to Ezekiel and realized he'd been telling them, prophesying a lot. All right? Now note. So, and they said unto him, that is, they came unto him, to Isaiah, thus saith Hezekiah, this day is a day of trouble, and of rebuke, and of contumely, that is, of discouragement, cast down, to be contemptuous, all that. For the children are come to the birth, and there is not strength to bring forth. We come to the end of our strength and power. Now we've got to have help. All right, now notice. This is a day of all of that. It may be Jehovah thy God will hear thy words of Rabshakeh, and whom the king of Assyria, his master, has sent to defy the living God, and will rebuke the words which Jehovah thy God hath heard. Wherefore lift up thy prayer for the remnant that is left. Now, they're coming to Isaiah now, coming and asking him to pray for them. When he says thy God, I don't think that means that they didn't have faith in the same God, but you've been teaching. Now, maybe with your faith in God, you can have an appeal to him. Notice the answer. So the servants of King Hezekiah came to Isaiah, and Isaiah said unto them, now I know plural, there was three of them, thus shall you say to your master, thus saith Jehovah, be not afraid of the words that thou hast heard, wherewith the servants of the king of Assyria have blasphemed me. Who the blaspheme? Not Hezekiah, not the people, but God, but Jehovah. When he talked about God, you're like one of the idols round about. When God is the only God. But I noticed another point that I wanted to note. Isaiah, when he says, immediately has an answer for him. I think he too had been praying. Now, Hezekiah went into the temple to pray, and I think that Isaiah had already been praying. God had given him an answer. He had the answer when they came. Blasphemy, behold, I will put a spirit in him, and he shall hear tidings, and shall return into his own land, and I will cause him to fall to the sword in his own land. Now, here he put in here, here is an experience of some kind, or something a spirit is going to put into him now. Hezekiah had heard that Tirhakah, the Pharaoh of Egypt, was coming against him. Now that might have been the message. it might be that God was going to destroy this 185,000 of his men. That would be the message that he heard. Or it may be that he heard tidings from home, that there was some kind of an uprising there. I don't know what it was. But God said, I'll put a spirit in it of some kind of ill tidings, and he'll return back to his home. Now, so he'll return to his own land and will cause him to fall to the sword in his own land. So Rabshakeh returned and found the king of Assyria warring against Libna, for he heard that he would depart from Lachish. Right, now here, as we pointed out so many times, you can only keep this idea in our mind here. Here's Jerusalem. Right now, Lachish was somewhere out about 20 miles here. Now, Libna was about 10 miles north there. Now, evidently, he left this city and gone up to war against this one. Now, whether he had destroyed this one or whether he had reached a point that he was wanting why he moved up there, we don't know. But sometime during the time, he sent Rabshakeh over here, while Rabshakeh comes back and finds him over here warring against his people there. All right, warring against Libna over there, for he had heard he had departed from Lachish. And he heard Satan's son Tahaka, king of Ethiopia, he has come out to fight against thee. Now that might be the evil tidings, you see. God will put evil tidings in his mouth. Now, with Tahaka, now Ethiopia, down here in Egypt, here with Egypt, Ethiopia on down, but Tahaka had come up, was coming up in Ethiopia. Or at least he heard he was coming. He didn't quite get there. And I say, when you're relying on those Egyptians and those people of Libya and all that, those people he talks about here, Tahaka, and coming up against him here, why, don't worry about those fellows. Ethiopia, I was trying to say, all right, to fight against thee. And when he heard it, he sent messengers to Hezekiah, saying, now, when Sennacherib hears that Tahaka, the king of Ethiopia, is coming up against him. Now, he sends three messengers back to Hezekiah, more urgently trying to persuade him to buckle under and give way, because he doesn't want to fight a war on two fronts. He doesn't want to be fighting against Hezekiah and fighting against Tahaka at the same time. Right? And when he sent to Hezekiah, saying, thus shall you speak to Hezekiah, king of Judah, saying, let not thy God, in whom thou trusted, deceive thee, since Jerusalem shall not be given into the hand of the king of Assyria. Now, don't be deceived by that. Behold, I have heard what the kings of Assyria have done to all lands by destroying them utterly, and shalt thou be delivered? Have the gods of the nation delivered them which my fathers had destroyed, Gozan and Haran and Rezpeh, and the children of Eden that were in Telassar, or where that was, somewhere in the Assyria, great Arabian desert land. Where is the king of Hamath, and the king of Arpad, and the king of the city of Sepharvaim, of Hena and Ava? Now, three or four of those have been located. Three of them, the last three, we don't know where they are. But now, so these are cities to the north up here, over to the north there, and probably some over in here that he had taken that on his way. Now, are you going to be able to stand against it? Now, well, if he's so certain of victory, why is he concerned? He's concerned because he's coming up to Hakka here, and he'll fight against him, and he doesn't want a war on two fronts. You don't have to dispatch a soldier here to fight against him, and fight a soldier over here to fight against Jerusalem. And so if he can just simply persuade Hezekiah to lose faith in God and give in to him, he would have won the battle without a fight. That's politicians for you. That's what all these fellows are trying to do now. But one of them wants to win his point without a fight. They're going to be into it one of these days. We'll get into it. We'll be in that one of these days. And Hezekiah received, and they sent him out this letter now. So apparently he sent these men, over to talk and a letter at the same time. Here's the letter. And Hezekiah received the letter from the hand of the messengers and read it. And Hezekiah went up unto the house of Jehovah and spread it before Jehovah. And how could Jehovah know all about it? That wasn't the point. He wants to show the Lord now what these fellows have done and how it's affecting him and his people. And Hezekiah prayed unto Jehovah, saying, O Jehovah of hosts, the God of Israel, that sittest above the cherubim, thou art the God, even thou alone of all the kingdoms of the earth. Thou hast made heaven and earth. Now notice what all that says there. Jehovah of hosts. Now that has two meanings. It can mean Jehovah the God of the hosts of heaven, all of the stars and planets. It also means of battles or armies. But the point is, whichever he has in mind, God is the God of both. He is Jehovah, the God of hosts, all hosts, the heavenly hosts and the earthly hosts. All right? And he alone is God. And of all the kingdoms of the earth, I have made heaven and earth. Now, I know three or four different things he urges. They're imperative. Incline thine ear, O Jehovah. Second, and hear. Third, open thine eyes, O Jehovah. Four, and see. Fifth, and hear of all the words of Sennacherib, who are sent to defy the living God. All right, now, open your ears and hear. Open your eyes and see, and understand and hear here the words of Sennacherib, how they're defying you. All right? So we now come to Jehovah with this matter. Who are sent to defy the living God. Of a truth, Jehovah, the kings of Assyria, have laid waste all the countries and their land, and cast their gods into the fire. For they were no gods, but the work of men's hands, wood and stone. Therefore they have destroyed them. Now therefore, O Jehovah our God, save us from his hand, that all the nations of the earth may know that thou art Jehovah, even thou only. And notice that one of the main things we're impressed with about his prayer is he seeks the exaltation of Jehovah. He's concerned about his people. He's concerned about himself. But basically, and I think it comes from his heart, here God has been defied. God has been blasphemed. Jehovah, the God of creation. Now then, avenge and vindicate your claim to be the one God, that he be not blasphemed. So Hezekiah is concerned about that. We can tell that. So we hasten along now. And then Isaiah the son of Amoz said unto Hezekiah, saying, thus says Jehovah the God of Israel. So while he's praying, apparently Isaiah also is still praying. Now then he sends him a message. For as thou hast prayed to me against Sennacherib, king of Assyria, this is the word which Jehovah has spoken concerning him. The virgin daughter of Zion, that is, she'd never been cast down, hath despised thee, and laughed thee to scorn. The daughter of Jerusalem has shaken her head at thee, and the people. So here the answer that God told Isaiah to send unto the king, to send them to Sennacherib. I'm sure Sennacherib appreciated that message when he got back. But you tell him here that you've spoken against God, and you'd be laughed to scorn. Whom has thou defied and blasphemed? Blasphemed by nations when they leave God out and go and hire everything without him. By thy servants have thou defied the Lord. And he said, with the multitude of my chariots am I come up to the height of the mountains, to the innermost parts of Lebanon. And I will cut down the tall cedars thereof, and the choice fir trees thereof. And I will enter into his farthest height, the forest of his fruitful field. Now that's symbolic language. What he's saying is, now you're boasting here that you're going to cut down all of the villages and cities, and you're going to take Jerusalem. You're going to enter into this fruitful country, and you're going to take it. But God said, that's your boast. That's your boast. The boast continues. I dig and drunk water. This is and with the sole of my feet, where I draw up all the rivers of Egypt. That was the boast, all the canals. And that's the boast of the king of Assyria. You're boasting that you're going to take everything before you. You're going right on down into Egypt and take Egypt. And that you're so big that you can just dam up the canals with the sole of your foot. Figurative, hyperbolic language, of course. Now, I ask a question. Now, God asked a question to these people. Hast thou not heard how I have done it long ago and formed it in ancient times? Now have I brought it to pass that it should be thine to lay waste 45 cities into ruinous heaps. Is it not at my decree? Did not God say that in the 10th chapter? Had not God intended all along to use these nations and bring them to an end, to destroy them? So this is not something that you planned yourself. God's been using you to do this. Therefore their inhabitants were a small power. They were dismayed and confounded. They were the grass of the field and of the green herb, as the grass on the housetops, and as a field of grain before it had grown up. So the weather flat tops here covered the dirt. Time of rain, the grass sprang up, came dry. Why, it turned brown. I've seen that years gone by when I was a boy when they lived at Wilcox. some of those houses there had mud covering over it. It was raining. You see the grass coming up up there. You've seen that. All right, well, that's what he told them about in this country. So this is God's answer. You've come over here because I brought you. You didn't intend it. That's what he said about the 10th chapter. I believe it is not so. But God knew it now. There's bosses in Washington and those over in the other countries over there, Iran and Iraq and Germany and Russia and all that. Do they think they're doing all this planning themselves? They got another thought coming. God is in control. God raises up, uses to punish, and then destroys. And he hadn't turned that over to the devil nor lose. He's still in control. So let that be our confidence. I get discouraged and disturbed at what's going on. Yeah, I think we're going to be right in the middle of a war before we know it. I think that's building up. But if it comes, I'm going to look at it as a judgment from God Almighty upon a people that's totally rejected him. And God sets up a government to function as the instrument of punishment for wrongdoing and the protector of the righteous. The nations that don't do that have all fallen. And that's what I'm trying to teach you. I'm trying to point that out all the way through the Old Testament. It's in the New Testament just as well. We're getting over that later. But I know thy sitting down and thy going out. It's God's answer to old Sennacherib. Sitting down and thy going out and thy coming in and thy raging against me. Because of thy raging against me and because thy arrogance is come up into mine ears. Therefore I put my hook in thy nose and my bridle in thy lips. And I will turn thee back by the way which thou camest. And then hasten. And this shall be the sign unto thee. You shall eat. Now this is to the people themselves, to Hezekiah. Thou shalt eat this year that which groweth of itself, and in the second year thou which springeth of the same, and in the third year sow ye and reap, and plant vineyards, and eat the fruit thereof. Now the rest of this year and next year, you'll still not get out to plant and all that. The third year you'll plant and reap. That'll be the sign. And the remnant that is escaped of the house of Judah shall again take root downward and bear fruit upward. For out of Jerusalem shall go forth a remnant, and out of Mount Zion they shall escape. The zeal of Jehovah of hosts shall perform this. I wish I had time to talk more about that. Let me hasten on. Therefore thus saith Jehovah concerning the king of Assyria, he shall not come unto this city, nor shoot an arrow there. Neither shall he come before it with shield, nor cast up a mound against it. By the way that he came, by the same shall he return, and he shall not come unto this city, saith Jehovah, for I will defend this city to save it, for mine own sake, and for my servant David's sake. I'm the one going to protect it. He's going to turn back. Now, evidently, what happened was that Sennacherib apparently now sent this 185,000. Now, whether they reached Jerusalem, or whether they were on their way, or just what happened, where they were, we're not told. And I know it's this last thought before my time is done. And the angel of Jehovah went forth and smote in the camp of the Assyrians 185,000. And when men arose early in the morning, behold, these were all dead bodies. Now, just whether they were in the environs of Jerusalem, whether they were on their way, or whether they were on the way to fight Tahaka, or were still fighting against Lachish, I don't know. So Sennacherib, king of Assyria, departed, and went and returned and dwelt at Nineveh. And he came, now you pass over 20 years. It was 701, it was 681 before this happened. 20 years later, God passes over that, is what we have today. Or tomorrow, or just one day, today. And it came to pass as he was worshipping in the house of Mizrach, his god, that Adrammelech and Sharezer, his sons, smote him with the sword, and escaped into the land of Ararat. And Esarhaddon, his son, reigned in his stead. God took control. But now what did they have to do before they were ready for that? They had to come to the point by their backs against the wall. There was no way to go. There was nothing that they could depend on. But when they hit the bottom, it seemed that then they had to put their faith in God, and that's what they did. Christ is excused.